CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. Monday has crept round again. Here it is. You ready to start your day? Well, I am here with Mash. We are ready to get your day going. And in case you have just woken up, which should be the case, I mean, why would you be up earlier than this? Then you're in luck, because we're going to be looking after you for the next 2 hours, making sure that you are off to a good start, even though it's fucking cold and early. We're going to make it happen. Am I right, Mash?
We have to.
Freezing.
But let's not let that stop us. Let's keep it moving.
Oh, well, I had a great wake up this morning. I decided to go downstairs and make myself a cup of coffee, and that's great. I was like looking forward to doing the show this morning. And then I walked along the passage to this room, and my little puppy has shat. Like fucking, it's
oh no,
like liquid dog shit in as many places as she could have. Like she had it was just vindictive. It's pure spite. It's like
what
she decided. I have no idea, but she obviously decided last night. This guy looks too happy. I need to ruin his morning. So I'm gonna go and have a diarrhea episode in the passage where it's not tiles, it's a carpet. So I'm gonna be cleaning that up. And the worst part is I can't clean it before the show because it's gonna take too long, right? So it's out there waiting for me, and it may go hard. It may you know, get worse. Certainly isn't going to smell great by the time I get to it. And I had to step past all of this to start the show this morning. So that's the best way to wake up on a Monday morning. Don't you agree?
That is the best way to wake up. You know,
so great.
Just waking up, skipping over shit, basically. And
yeah, it's lovely.
Geez, that is terrible.
Yeah, thanks for that.
That is terrible. So how are you even going to clean that up? Where do you even start?
Well, you want to know? I've got a plan. So what I'll do is I'll get a whole lot of toilet paper or paper toweling and like try to like clean up the majority of it. Then you'll have to get a one of those plastic buckets with a brush and some warm soapy water, and that's the really fun part because you get to you know what I'm going to do. I mean you're nodding along like it's not. This is going to be so much fun. What a way to start my week.
Jeez. And also, isn't the puppy house trained yet?
Yeah, but it's cold, so she won't go outside at night.
Oh, shame, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
great,
hey? She's okay, though.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at her now. She's happy. She's as thrilled as can be. She doesn't give a shit. She's given all her shits. She's got none left to give.
Wow.
So she's fine. Anyway, so, I mean, that's, you know, just when you are in a positive state of mind, you can't let things like this get you down.
That
so
is
that's,
true.
Yeah.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
But, you know what? Speaking of diarrhea episodes, I mean, I almost had one of my own this past weekend.
Oh, no. oh, no.
So this past weekend, quite eventful, lots of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a few things, you know, quite a few last minute things, and I didn't have load shedding. So I can't share where I live because I didn't have load shedding at all.
Ooh.
And I hope somebody out there actually forgot about us or something. Fingers crossed.
Lucky you.
But this past weekend, so my roommate has actually been looking for a car. She's in the market for a car. Mm-hmm. I don't know why anyone would want one at this point, honestly, but she wants to buy a car. Great.
Yeah.
So I was like, listen, let's go to some car dealerships and actually just look at your options. You know, you have to do quite some research.
Well, that's exciting. I mean, what a fun thing to do, to like go out because now you're going to go buy a car. I mean, that's cool.
It's lots of fun. And
right.
What I enjoy about this is, I mean, there's always new cars, new technologies, new features every time. So it's always new, even for you as someone who already has a car. Because you get to see all these new features
and
all of that.
Yeah, because you don't realize how much like development and technical advancement is going on the whole time.
Sure. A lot. Mm. All the time with all these car manufacturers. So we decided to actually go to a couple of car dealerships, start close by, and then go further away. And I'm like, test drive. because she's had her license for actually not too long, but for quite some time. She's had it for about a year.
Okay.
But the thing is, in this year, since she got her license, she's never driven. So she just got a license and then just never drove. So I didn't realize, and she didn't tell me that, hey, I'm a bit crusty. It's been quite a minute. Wow. So I do need a bit of practice.
And now you're in the car with this maniac. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm in the car, and the passenger seat's in the front, and the people from the dealership are sitting at the back.
Oh, boy.
Now, she starts driving, and I realize, first of all, we're just driving automatic cars.
Uh-huh.
And once I saw the car bumping and grinding, I was like, it's automatic. What are you doing? This is two pedals. So I was already a bit nervous, and she gets on the road. This was in Bryanston, by the way. Oh, so you know that main road in Bryanston that leads to Sandton with the four lanes?
Yeah.
That is where she was driving.
Oh.
And I almost crapped my pants. That's what I almost did. She trying to keep herself as the driver in the middle of the lane. So half the car was in the next lane. I was screaming. The person from the dealership was screaming. And every time they'd go like, yeah, turn left. She just tried to swerve into the left lane, and all just be like, no, indicate, do something. She's like, wow, how do I indicate? I'm like, just push the stalk up. And she's like, okay. And then she's turning on the headlights, the wipers are coming on. Now she's freaking out even more. The car's swerving back and forth in the lane.
Did she buy her license?
I hope not.
I'm telling you, it sounds like she did.
I really hope not. It really sounds
like she
did.
How did she not know what to do? Like, she doesn't have any idea of how traffic works or how the car... How can she be asking, where do I indicate? Like,
she didn't know at all. The wipers are coming on, water's flashing on the screen. It's like those scenes in comedy movies when somebody tries to do something in the car and other things happen exactly like that. And this wasn't funny because I was just scared for my life. Well, now that I made it out alive, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, no,
but
hilarious.
But during the moment, it wasn't.
I'm always amazed. Like, there seem to be a lot of people on the road who are just like her. They don't know how to drive their cars. And yet somehow they got their license. And somehow they're able to convince the bank to pay for a car for them. I don't know how that happens.
I do not know how these people do it. But somehow they managed to do it. And there's many of them on the road. There are many.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them don't even have their L at the back.
Uh-oh.
So that's also very concerning.
I always think the ones with the L at the back are even more scary because they're admitting up front that they don't know what they're doing. So you just know when you get close enough to them, it's a disaster zone. If you can avoid them, obviously you
but
try.
But that's good.
Oof.
Yeah, that's good because you know to avoid them because of the L. God. Without
and,
the L,
and,
it's
and
a bit tough.
What is with these people who got their license like 4 years ago, but they still have the L in their car? What's that all about? Because you know they're those.
Seen those people before.
It's almost like they are asking for forgiveness for crimes they have not yet committed.
I don't know. Maybe they just want to be avoided. I'm not too sure. Perhaps they just want to be avoided on the roads. Oh, and what's even scarier for me are the people with big cars with the L at the back.
Oh, man.
And in some cases, I'm like, okay, maybe it's like a mom who shares her car with their daughter. Maybe she's teaching her daughter how to drive.
Right.
But at the same...
Sorry, I don't know what happened there. The internet just decided to kick me off. How irritating. And now Mash is gone, so we'll see if we can get him back. Just suddenly everything just kicked off. Don't know what the hell happened. All right. Tracy says... Oh, there he is. Okay. Sorry, I don't know what happened to us. We just... disconnected us. Yeah. In Australia, says Tracy, once you have your license, you drive around with a P on your rear window. You are on probation for 2 years after you get your license. Over here, P would stand for something else. Yeah, puss. That's about it.
You beat me to it. my dad likes calling the people with L, with L's on the back of their car. He likes saying, hey, Lishanya, Lishanya, Kileu. Lishanya means crazy person in Sotho. So he's like, ah, Lishanya.
Wow, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that because people just shouldn't. You know what? Honestly, like if you and I've driven badly in my life, and frankly, when you're in your 20s, you should still be learning. And people in their 20s, they take chances, they drive a little faster. That's why insurance is so much more expensive for you when you're in your 20s. And for your first 5 years of driving, they put the insurance premiums right up because they know you drive like an idiot, right? But ultimately, I think that some people just never get better than that. Like, they always are a disaster. There's always a mess.
Some people don't even care. Some people just don't have that sense of urgency. And
I had,
it doesn't register in them that it's life and death.
I had an idea over the weekend. I actually went out with Ben on Saturday for drinks, and I took an Uber. So on the way there, I had a guy from Rwanda drive me, who was fascinating. He told me some amazing stories. So I want to start a podcast where we get these Uber drivers into the studio, and we get them to tell their stories. This guy was telling me he once picked up a girl. She was so drunk that she passed out in the back of the Uber. And when they got to her house, they couldn't wake her up. So he asked security, because it was at an estate or something, to help wake her up. So they, like, shaking her, like, hello, ma'am, wake up, you know, kind of like, hello, like shaking her shoulders and everything, wouldn't wake up. So then they poured water on her. She still didn't wake up. So this guy was like, what am I going to do? So he took her to the police station, which was nearby, because that's what you meant to do, right? And the police took one look at this woman, and they're like, there's nothing we could do to wake her up. So they're like, he says they beat her, but I mean, I don't know that they actually beat her. I think they just, well, I mean, who knows, right? Without police, anything's possible. Anyway, they eventually put her in a police cell because she would not wake up. She clearly wasn't dead. She was snoring and everything. They put her in the police cell, and she woke up the next morning. Apparently, she sent the Uber driver a thank you the next day. I mean, I don't know what she was thanking him for, and I don't know why she even got so drunk. Anyway, the next time he said he picked up a different girl who was totally, completely naked. She had no clothes on. He said she wasn't even wearing, you know, he's got this great Rwandan accent. So he goes, she's not even wearing a panty. And she was stalkers. And he had to drop her off at home. He said this one guy asked him to stop and drop him off. So he thought the guy was going to throw up. Then he got out of the car, the passenger, walked over to a tree and was doing this. So the driver said to him, what are you doing? So he said, no, I'm using my fingerprint to open my door. I'm home. He was so hammered, he thought the tree was his front door. Can you imagine the stories? Oh, my God.
I'm sure they witness this all the time. Yeah. I mean, most of us also do have stories like these, though.
Well, listen, these guys, they see the best and worst. And, I mean, they sometimes pick up people. I told you the one day we went to a drinks party in Sandhurst, which is quite a smart neighborhood. And this one guy was telling us about how he's dropped off all these famous politicians and their children who are so drunk at 3 a.m. And you hear some stories, man. Really, really interesting stories. So I'm thinking we should do a series of podcasts on, like, Uber drivers' tales. And I'll find some of the ones that I've been... These people could tell you some funny stories, and it would be a real hit. Oh. I mean, like, there's some amazing stuff going on in the world that you don't see because, you know, we're all asleep by, like, 2 a.m., and apparently that's when the real fun starts. So
there's a lot of fun out there.
The other one, the woman who brought me back, her name was Boipelo, and she was telling me about, like, all the crazy things that have happened in her cars. But she also said, like, being a woman driver, a lot of women would prefer to have a woman driver. And she said she has to travel around with a screwdriver, a knife, and mace in case. Because she said you never know. She hasn't had any incidents recently, but she said you never know when you pick up someone, whether they're aggressive or violent or, you know, that they've got some kind of a history. And he said you can't be sure. So it's really it's unbelievable. Anyway, I mean, I just thought that was quite funny.
Rather because be safe.
These Uber drivers have the best stories. If you don't talk to them, you are missing out.
That is true. Some of them have some interesting stories. Although some of us as passengers also have some interesting stories with these Uber drivers. I mean, I actually made a TikTok of one experience I had where I was actually visiting a friend of mine in Waterfall. And then I actually left my car at my friend's mother's house, which is in Benoni. Oof. And then we took her car to Waterfall because she was actually moving to a new house.
Right.
And I was like, listen, petrol kind of expensive. Let's just take one car and keep it moving. Cool. Mm-hmm. So then when it's time to go, she's like, listen, I'm going to stay here, but I will Uber you home because I came with nothing. I literally came with nothing there. So she's like, I'll just order you an Uber home. I mean, to my mother's house. And then you just grab your car and go home from there. I'm like, okay, sounds good. Orders the Uber. Uber arrives and comes into the complex. In fact, it wasn't an Uber. It was a Bolt, to be precise.
Okay.
And drives into the complex and picks me up. And it's one of those complexes where it's basically like each individual house, each little block is like a house.
Uh-huh.
And it picks me up right in front of her house. And then she steps out to say bye-bye. And cool. She steps out. I come into the car. And after getting into the car, the Uber driver goes, the Bolt driver rather, goes, is that your Mehdi? Is that your girlfriend? I'm like, no, it's my friend. He's like, zomitisala. I'm like, hey, bo.
Yo.
And that basically means, I'm going to make this one pregnant. Yeah, I'm going to make this one pregnant. And I was like,
Jesus.
Girl. I just laughed.
Some rough.
A nervous laugh.
Well, I mean, Ruan says quite rightly, it is brave to be an Uber driver. There are too many psychopaths out there. Damn right.
Crazy people out there. Yeah, I once had a female Uber driver pick me up.
Yeah.
And I remember stepping out of the complex and I saw the Uber actually driving away. I had to run after it. And when I got to it, I realized that somebody else had gotten into the Uber. And basically, you know,
they got into your Uber?
Mesh. Yeah, it's my Uber. And this person got into it. And when you get into the Uber, they normally ask you,
what's your name?
I'm Mesh. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm Mesh. And or they'll even ask what address you're going to just to confirm that you are the person. And I suppose this person, they were asked, are you Mesh? And they're like, yep, I'm Mesh. And they got in. And then I ran after this Uber. I ran it down. It stopped. It was a female driver.
Yeah.
And some guy had gotten into it and pretended to be me. And I was like, dude, do you not see this is not your Uber? Were you not asked where you're going? Were you not asked to confirm your name? You're not Mesh.
Jesus, so did he get out?
So it's terrifying. He got out. I kicked him out of it and I got in. And I was talking to this woman and she was like, thank goodness. She was so relieved, driver, because she was like, I don't know what he would have done to me. Why was he in here?
And he's not going to pay cash, right? So he's going to either ride on your money, which means he'll be changing the destination. There's no chance he was going to the same place you were going to. And then this poor Uber driver is going to be stuck with the bill. But I find these people fascinating. Like it's a tough job, but at the same time, you are in charge of your time. You can decide how much you want to drive, how much you don't. And they were telling me about how if someone throws up in your car, that you have to take a picture of it and then you have to send the picture to Uber. Then you have to take your car for a valet. Then Uber will pay for your valet of your car if someone throws up in there.
Don't they charge the person? Because last time
they do. They it happened to, with a friend. They meant to charge the person.
Yeah.
That's right. And the other
it
thing,
happened with some friends of mine.
The other thing, if you leave anything in the car and they bring it back for you, you really should pay them extra for that because that is not a trip that is their fault. You know, if you left something in their car... I mean, that's obviously what nice people would do. But this guy was saying to me, he's obviously had guests in his Uber who were not nice people, who refused to pay for his trip. So he would bring back someone's wallet or their phone or whatever, and then they wouldn't even pay him extra. So he would have to take on that cost, which is crazy, right?
No, at least pay a tip. At least pay a tip. He doesn't owe you that. He or she doesn't owe you that.
Yeah. Well, listen to this. Ethan says, picking up drunk women is only the surface of what Uber drivers have seen and experienced. Being an Uber driver is actually an incredibly dangerous thing, considering how many people use Ubers to conceal secrets. That's true. You know, like people who are having affairs and that kind of thing because you can't be traced. There's no car. Kevin says, it's a good day when you step into an Uber and there's no warning lights on the dashboard. Those cars are in horrendous condition. Well, some of them. I mean, you know, again, this woman who I got a lift back with on Saturday, she had a clean car. It was in beautiful condition. And she was, you know, like really friendly and presentable and like professional. Like you meet good and bad people in every industry. So I don't think it's fair to say all of them are shit. Tracy says direct stream on that sprays like... on that sprays like I'm Spider-Man. Okay, right. She's busy replying to something. Never understood the replies. Doesn't make sense. Minri says, I've been in an Uber with the worst driver ever. I honestly don't know how he got his license. I was scared for my life. Reported his driving on the app, but we could have been in such a big accident. Well, I once got into an Uber van with some friends. This is now a couple of years ago. And this guy was, his engine was steaming the whole time. There was something going on there. So eventually we just said to him, look, pull over. We'll find someone else to take us. Because I think this car was probably close to exploding.
Jeez, I've had an experience like that as well, but not in an Uber, in a taxi, which is so much worse, actually. I was actually taking a taxi from Gallo Manor to Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And I recall the taxi started smoking and smoking and smoking. Got to a point where we couldn't actually breathe in the taxi. And we kept yelling, driver, stop, driver, driver, please stop. And he didn't want to stop.
Right.
He didn't want to stop. He kept saying, you guys have already paid. I have to get you to Joburg.
We're going
to
push through.
But we kept screaming, but we're going to die. It started steaming, not even steaming, smoking so much from the engine.
And you can smell it, right?
And eventually he had to stop. You could smell it. We couldn't even see out the windows. Yep.
No, I'll tell you
how bad it was.
There are a lot of cars that should not be on the road out there. And, of course, it's pathetic to even imagine that there's someone who's going to regulate this stuff. We know that the Metro Police and the Traffic Police, these are not people who are interested in whether your car's roadworthy or not. This isn't Australia.
Yeah.
They're actually just interested in a bribe. Even if your car...
Yeah, I mean, you
could... It could have flames coming out of the windows and be driving along the highway, and they won't pull you over if they can't get a bribe out of you.
Absolutely. And I mean, even the license department, when you actually have to go get a car certified for roadworthiness,
exactly,
you can just pay a bribe.
Yeah, correct.
You can just pay a bribe and you're sorted. You're on the streets with that terrible, horrendous thing of yours.
Yo, speaking of terrible, horrendous things, I was talking to a family friend over the weekend, and she told me she'd been to Lagos recently. Woo!
Ooh.
Let me tell you something. I have heard a couple of horrible stories about Lagos, but she's not a dramatic person. She was telling me about how that place is an absolute toilet. Lagos is like the most disgusting place in the world, according to her. She said literally there are bodies floating in the rivers, dead human bodies, because if you find a body, you're responsible for doing something about it. So the state they're not going to bury a body for you. So if you discover a body somewhere, you have to bury it or burn it or whatever. Nobody cares. So these people, literally dead people in places. She said the traffic obviously is an absolute nightmare. But she said even in the hotels and, you know, the smart part of town in Lagos, it is appalling. Yeah. She says people dress very well, but it's dirty everywhere. There's mountains of rubbish, and people live in the low-lying areas where there's often flooding, like especially after the heavy rains, but they live in the water, and it's obviously a big open sewer as well, so they shit in the water too, and it's just this mess. And she said besides that, they actually have rubbish, like plastic rubbish is their breakwater to, like, try and keep the water out. It's unbelievable. So Lagos is definitely, not on my list of places to go to after that conversation. Hey, Leanne.
Wow. Hi, Leanne.
Hello, everybody.
You got your load shedding sorted out?
Yeah, I came back on a few minutes early. Huge bonus. What a way to start the Monday.
I know. Yeah,
it's a privilege.
Is it weird how we start clapping and, like, cheering for ourselves when our load shedding is a little bit shorter than we thought it would be?
Yeah. It's the small things you've got to celebrate.
Yes, Leanne, look at you, the VIP.
I'm telling you. Yeah. you're so privileged.
I know.
Anyway, we were just talking about Lagos, because this friend of mine was telling me about how she went there. It just sounds absolutely fucking horrendous. And she said they have no respect for infrastructure at all there. So no one maintains the infrastructure. So what happens is every 4 years they have elections. And when the elections roll around, a new government takes over and they don't honor the contracts of the previous government. So if you were the people who did, I don't know, the water pipes in Lagos, and you were halfway through a project, the election rolls around, someone else takes office, you're gone. New people come in. So there are all these half-built houses, half-built buildings, open sewers and pipes. Like, electricity is way worse than we've got it here. Like, she said she checked into a hotel and she wanted to charge her phone. And she went down to reception and said, oh, the plug's not working. She's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. That building gets power in the morning. We get power in the afternoon. That's how it works.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Okay, that's next level load shedding.
I mean, what an absolute toilet. So when people talk about Nigeria being like, you know, this amazing forward-thinking country, the future of Africa, clearly that's a whole lot of PR bullshit. Because it sounds to me like it is absolutely a toilet. Hey, got to talk about this because two South African media icons died over the weekend. I mean, there's probably two names that MASH doesn't even know, so I'm not going to suppose you don't know, but two of my other friends, they didn't know who these people were, so I'm just assuming anyone under 35 probably would have no idea who these people are. So Leanne will know. I mean, the one was Kevin Savage, who used to be a radio guy, DJ. He used to... Kevin Savage was... I think he even started his own business. He started a media group right in the beginning after he left Five, I think it was, to go and pursue his own media career.
Yeah, so he started at Capital 604.
Yeah.
And then he went on to 5FM and then beyond. He started like a mentorship program.
Oh, yeah?
Just had amazing music knowledge. But we did have a lot of Kevins as DJs and presenters. So
yeah.
I had to just Google him to make sure I knew which Kevin it was.
Right. I mean, he was a very big deal in his day. I mean, it's kind of sad to think about, you know, so many of these people who, I mean, these guys are probably a little bit older than my generation of broadcasters, but still, you know, they're people who,
yeah,
you kind of know about and you knew about. And Kevin Savage was a big deal. And then the other one was Barry Ronger. I mean, so MASH, do either of these names mean anything to you?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Didn't think so.
But yeah. Shame. I mean, Barry Ronger, we probably knew a bit more because of his involvement in TV more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And he did these, you know, movie reviews.
Are you joking? We didn't know what movies to watch unless Barry Ronger told us which movies to watch. He's like,
you've
got to watch this movie. It's got the most marvelous cinematography, and you could get, I'll give it a scintillating six. Or a, what did he always say, like a terrific, tremendous 10. Or whatever. He'd give ratings. So here's Kevin Savage, in case you don't know who we're talking about. That was Kevin Savage. Shame. So he died over the weekend. Yeah. And these guys weren't super, super old. They're in their 70s, these two. And there's Barry Ronger, the famous Barry Ronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Barry, I mean, I always joke about the, you know, the Barry Ronger thing, because Thabo Modisani, who used to be my producer, Thabo used to produce, he used to control for Barry, and for a little while, I mean, it was the shortest period I've ever had in my life of doing a job that I was useless at, but thank God it ended mercifully shortly, you know, and I was producing, and Barry always said I was the worst producer he ever had, because I produced for, I don't know, maybe four episodes of his show, and he did this show where he talked to all the theater people and all the book people, and I mean, I was 21, I was so not interested in that shit, so I hated doing that show. And then I'd have to call up these people who were doing like a play at some tiny little theater in the East Rand. And they'd come in to be interviewed by Barry. And it was, you know, these are the glory days of radio. So it was a big deal for people from some little theater to come in and be interviewed by him. And he was very, very meticulous. He liked, you know, being prepared properly. Mm-hmm. And he was very good at what he did. He was a highly intelligent guy, Barry, and had a very sophisticated look and outtake about what the world was. So I learned quite a bit from him in that very short time, but he did admit I was the worst producer he ever had. But Thabo was his controller at the time, so he was his like studio engineer. Because the presenters never controlled the mixing desk themselves, you know, in those days, especially on talk radio. They would stand behind the microphone in Barry's case, stand. Some of them would sit. And then the controller would run the show technically, right? So he would stand there and they'd start the show with that Tavares song, Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel. And then Barry would like do a little dance, Tava would say, before the show would start, which is hilarious because I keep picturing in my head, because that's one of the abiding memories of like this, because he was quite a big guy. Like he was, I wouldn't say he was obese, but he was definitely overweight. He had this big beard.
Yeah.
And he would stand there kind of doing this little dance. It was almost like a little jig before his show started. And that was like the happy Barry Ronger that I knew. He was a really interesting dude and wrote some incredible stuff for the Sunday Times over the course of his career. So, you know, another contributor to South African culture who's gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, I always play that clip of Barry choking up. Don't you remember?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yes. The clip of him kind of going...
What was he talking about again?
I'm choking. The movie Material. Riyad Moussa's movie.
Yeah.
Material. That was where it was. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. Here's Barry. Here's Barry Ronger.
I know that so well. I'm choking up. Look, I'll come back in a moment. I got all choked up.
I got all choked up. Shame. Poor old Barry. So I'm sad. When I heard the news, I was all choked up. Oh, I'm so choked up. Shame. Anyway, there's Barry. So I did have a drink with Ben on Saturday in honor of Barry Ronger. Barry wasn't that old. He's 74. He presented No Jacket Required, which then became top billing. That's exactly right.
Wow.
Him. Yeah. That's correct. It was the show that led to top billing. Yes, Barry Ronger, where's the choking clip? Oh, good heavens, I remember Kevin Savage very well. As for Barry Ronger, what an institution, very sad, says Moonchild. James Caan also passed away recently from The Godfather. You know, well, these I don't want to start Monday's show with an obituary, for God's sake. You know, it's depressing. It's not a great way to start the morning. Anyway, there is some news, and we've got to pay attention to some of this news. Do you want to quickly go through some headlines with me? You up for that?
Yes.
All right. So in the news this morning, I don't know if you saw this horrible story about this shooting at a tavern in Soweto. Is this a thing now? Like, are taverns on purpose being targeted? Is there something about taverns that we need to be aware of? I mean, if you can, avoid these places, because clearly there's a lot going down there at the moment. A bloody weekend across South Africa. 15 people were shot dead at a local tavern in Nomzamo Park in Soweto, leaving 9 people critically injured in hospital. A tavern in Pietermaritzburg was also targeted. 4 people killed there. I mean, this is unbelievable. A 9mm firearm had been used on, and several cartridges were found on the scene in Soweto. They believe there must have been more than one shooter. At this stage, we don't know what the motive for the shooting was, but I can say it looks like the shooters came with intention to kill randomly. So, not necessarily specific people. That's the scary part of this. People ranged between ages 19 and 35, an estimated total of 23 people shot. Most of the people who were shot at were male. He said the tavern is currently closed. Bodies are still lying on the crime scene. A team of investigators is hard at work trying to gather evidence so that the arrests can happen as soon as possible. What do you make of this?
It is just terrifying. I mean, there was also 2 people shot in Katlehong as well.
Oh, yeah?
This past weekend on Saturday. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what is going on. Apparently on Twitter, there was a voice note going around about somebody saying they're going to shoot up South Africans or something like that. I do not know what to make up of this. This conspiracy thing going around.
So that would what they mean? The person who said that was not a South African? Is that what they're saying?
Yes. Yes, they said the person who was speaking is Mozambican or something, but I'm not sure what to make of it.
That's not great. That's very scary. India has tightened flour exports after a global wheat shortage. India will impose restrictions on the export of flour in a fresh move to insulate domestic markets from a global wheat crisis. And, of course, you know what that's going to mean, right, for everybody in the world. More expensive.
Prices go up.
More expensive bread. So India is like, no, we're not going to be exporting if there's a shortage. So Russia and Ukraine together account for almost a quarter of global wheat supply. but their ongoing war has disrupted the supply chain, caused a worldwide shortage. Now, India, who produce 109 million tons of wheat, export around 7 million tons of that, but they've decided they're going to stop exporting for the moment so they can keep for the domestic market. Another scary thought, because that'll mean increased prices there. A new Arizona law has made it illegal to record police within 2 meters of an arrest. Apparently, this law requires bystanders filming officers to stand at least 8 feet away. According to this bill, which was signed into law, the governor, Doug Ducey, bystanders who violate the law by recording police officers within 2.4 meters of activity are faced with a class 3 misdemeanor. So I wonder why they're doing this.
Well, firstly, it's dangerous. I mean, you see some of these clips going around.
Yeah.
Morning
Hardy does.
Flying by. You see these clips going around where there's live shooting going on and someone's just standing there recording. Firstly, like, you're putting yourself in danger. Secondly, you're probably putting the operation in danger.
Yeah.
Police can't just shoot civilians if you're in the way. And you kind of, it's like with all of this filming stuff, you get stuck behind the camera and you're so busy watching what's on your screen, you know, that becomes your reality and you don't realize how exposed you are and that you could be messing up operations.
Well, don't you think, if you think about all these people that are running around and they're recording everything. I mean, this is how we see all these incidents, right? Because everybody's on their phone the whole goddamn time. Everything that happens, you'll see people won't get involved in trying to help somebody who's had something terrible happen to them. They're too busy recording.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think they're going to be a YouTube star.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the kind of law we need.
I don't think the police necessarily want their every move on camera as well. I mean, they've got to make some decisions that might seem controversial to civilians, but they've had to make them, you know, at the time. They don't need that extra scrutiny when they're trying to do their jobs.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Anyway, so those are some of the headlines for this weekend. I see lots of comments here. Did you guys see a small plane crashed in RSA? Hundreds of looters stripped the small plane to the bones, looting a crash plane. What next? Did that really happen?
Yes. So I was relaying the story the other day, and I couldn't remember which part of South Africa it was in.
Yeah.
But it was an instructor pilot and his student.
Yeah.
And they had to make a literal crash landing on a car road, a motorway.
Right, yeah.
And they were still inside the crashed plane when people came out of nowhere and just started ripping off parts of the plane, the metal and.
Do you know where it happened?
No, I can do a little search.
Please do a quick search. That's so awful.
Wow.
What kind of?
What are they going to do with the parts?
Well, sell them for scrap metal, but I mean, you
sell them for steel. Yeah.
You at least wait for the air crash investigators to get there. You know, it's like these trucks that are carrying, I don't know what, Coca-Cola or whatever, and then they crash and people start looting immediately. They don't even know whether the driver's alive or not. They like start taking shit out of the back of the truck. It's unreal.
So it took place in Cape Town. It was in Lower Crossroads.
It was near Delft.
So they had experienced difficulty. They'd crashed in this open field, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And then this crowd came in and tried to rob them as well of their possessions.
Well, you've heard these stories about how you've heard, I mean, like, honestly, everybody always tries to paint the poor in any country in the world. They're always like, well, the poor are virtuous, good people. I'm sorry, if this is how the poor are behaving because they need money for scrap metal and they rip the metal off a plane accident and they start stripping things before the bodies have even been taken out. That just shows you how animal these people are. Those are not good people. Anyone who's doing that, they're not doing it for survival. They're just scavenging hyenas. That's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal.
And Leanne, did the pilot and the instructor survive?
Yeah, they did. Apparently, it just says here they were taken for medical observation.
By a ball hair. I mean, I'm surprised these people didn't try to eat them. monsters. Really, I mean, yeah, honestly. Geez. I mean, those people, quite
don't
rightly,
hear of that anywhere
so
else.
Quite rightly, G-Star says people are poor because they behave the way they do. Okay, that's not always true. But there is, you know, you can argue, like, are people poor and that's why they behave like that? Or do they behave like that and that's why they're poor? It's worth looking at those things. You know, I mean, there are poor people who are good and would never do something like that. And then there are poor people who are just disgusting human beings who will do that. Just like there are rich people who are awful, awful, awful people. And there are rich people who are really nice people.
Hmm.
All that money does is make
it a thing of
amplifies everything, right? It just magnifies the.
Yeah.
If you are a nice person and you have money, you might just be a nicer person. And if you are a nice person and you don't have money, it might even make you more charitable and friendly and nice. But if you're a horrible person, it's not going to make you any better. It's unreal. Anyway, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I'm always just horrified at, like, the kinds of things that go on. You go out for a night and you don't realize in South Africa that you go, you know, to your usual place where you meet your friends, some tavern in Soweto. Some guy's going to come in with a gun, like just randomly mow people down. That is some scary, scary stuff. This is stuff that we read about in America. You know, we read that there was a shooting at some establishment in America. By the way, 15 people dead apparently already, and they say that the death toll could be in the 20s, even higher. That would be among the biggest shooting events in America in the last...
Yeah. Yeah.
3-4 years. And here
yeah,
we're,
that's what
we're
kind
like,
of
here we're like, ah,
was,
well.
Yeah. Mm. You know, as soon as I saw 15 dead in a tavern shooting, I thought that would have been, people would have been going mad over that in the US.
Oh, absolutely. Would have made headline news for a week. Here we'll be over it by tomorrow. Well, we do want to be over certain things by tomorrow, and the person to help us figure all this out is Dr. Hanan. So what I thought we would do this morning, and I did kind of indicate on Friday that we wanted you to start participating live with us on the show, is we'll take your issues, your questions, your situations, your problems, and put them straight to Dr. Hanan and let him try to solve them this morning. So if you've got something that's on your mind... And I started the ball rolling on Friday by talking about how some people are very depressed at the moment, and for good reason. And some people are feeling a little bit edgy. Some people are feeling like, you know, life is not exactly going their way right at the moment. So we're going to ask you right now to put your questions to Dr. Hanan. Anything that's on your mind, you can let us know, and you can address him directly. I'll either read your question to him if you send us a comment, or if you'd like to, you can email us. Either way, contact at cliffcentral.com. And we'll ask Dr. Hanan this morning. And, you know, as I said on Friday, I don't know if you heard this, but if you didn't, I'll give you a very brief precy. It's the middle of winter. We've had load shedding, which makes it very difficult for people to just live their lives. A lot of people are very, very concerned, and rightly so, over the price of everything. I mean, living is more expensive now than ever before. And all of this combines to lay a pretty awful foundation, even for the most optimistic people. And I'm just scratching the surface with those three issues. There are many, many more. Mm. You know, people are going through a tough time. We've just had 2.5 years of coronavirus and lockdowns, and that's obviously impacted on people very badly. So if you're feeling a bit down, you're not the only one. The reason I brought this up on Friday was I mentioned three different people who have just... Three people who I know personally who are not, like, down people. They're usually very upbeat and optimistic. And I said the three of them have been honest about the fact that they're really struggling at the moment. Life is not good. They're feeling quite down. And I thought, well, it's probably not just them. And if you're feeling that way, maybe you want to get involved too. So let's see what Dr. Hanan has got for us this morning. And we'll obviously put any situation, question, issue, relationship problem, mental health question that you may have. And we'll ask Dr. Hanan if he can solve them right here, right now. Send us a comment on YouTube, and we will put it straight across to the doctor. Hey, Doc, you're outside.
Hey, guys. How's this for dedication to the cause? I'm actually away. I'm in Dalstrom.
Oh, wow. Beautiful.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's incredible. Can I just make you jealous for 2 seconds?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that's beautiful. But it is cold, right? That place is freezing.
It is freezing. So I couldn't be inside the house. I mean, it's just chaos there. So I had to come outside. It feels like 2 or 3 degrees. It is cold.
But it looks amazing. All right. We love the change of scenery. So, Doc, this morning we're going to take people's questions and we're going to try and answer and help deal with their questions this morning in whichever way, shape, or form they roll in. But I just wanted to start off with your basic comments on the way that a lot of people are circumstantially quite down at the moment, and for all kinds of good reasons. I mentioned it in the intro. You know, we've got a lot to deal with in South Africa right now, in the world. Right now, a lot of people don't feel particularly good at this time of year. A lot of people are a little bit down. The electricity situation doesn't help. There's obviously plenty of good reasons for people to feel not so optimistic, even though they might be optimistic people the rest of the time. So if you're one of those people who generally is quite optimistic and happy, and you've hit the skids a little bit, what kind of mental tricks can you do to get yourself out of that and to get yourself back on track and to start doing stuff that fills you up with positivity and energy and gets you going in the morning?
So, you know what? If you look around you, the truth is there's a lot of things to be frustrated and feel frustrated about. There are a lot of things to grieve. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things to be angry about. But there's also some things to be grateful for, too. Gareth, you and I have discussed this many times on this show and on your TV show, the law of focused intent. Mm-hmm. And I cannot stress this enough, especially at this time. If I had to ask you as an experiment, let's say I met you here in Dalstrom and you drove all the way here, and I said to you as you arrived, how many red cars did you see on the road? Mm-hmm. You would go, red cars? I can't even think of one. But on the other hand, if I asked you on the way here, just to be aware of all the red cars that you see, you'll probably pick 100, 150 on the way here.
Yeah.
You didn't attract red cars. Red cars were always there. But the fact that you were focused and intentional about it allowed it to come into awareness. What you focused on and what you're intentional about is what appears. Now, there's no magic about it. I'm not for, and I don't believe in this concept of the law of focused intent. The biggest load of nonsense ever. You know, we don't track things. But what happens the moment we are intentional about something, it just comes into consciousness because we look for it. So people say, but Hanan, there is bad in the world, and here's the truth. There are a lot of blue cars too, and there's a lot of pink cars, and a lot of green cars. But the fact that you're acknowledging that or looking for the red cars doesn't reject the fact that other cars exist too. But what you're saying is, I choose to focus on the things that are good for me and that I can control.
Right.
So in real life, I'll wake up in the morning and I need to be very intentional about what I'm going to look for. So I can wake up in the morning and go, why does my life suck? Well, if I do that, I will pick up all the reasons of why my life sucks versus why am I the luckiest person in the world? And never mind that, where are the opportunities? If I ask the right questions, I get the right answer. So the answers that you get from life are heavily dependent on the questions that you ask. So yes, are there things to complain about? Absolutely no question, the blue cars exist. But I urge everybody to wake up and live with intention and ask the right question. Be intentional and focus on the things that you want to see as opposed to let life dictate for you. One more thing that are just in line with that. My favorite quote of all time is, if you're not the chess player of your life, you're a pawn in someone else's. Ooh. If you're not intentional about what you want to create for your life, you'll just live at somebody else's intent, period. You don't have a choice of kind of like winging it and not living out somebody's intent. If you wing it, you will live at somebody else's chess game, period.
That's a very good way of looking at it. All right, so quick follow-up here, and this is from something we've discussed previously on the show. Samantha says, panic. What do I do in the middle of a major panic attack, Doc? Sure.
Yeah. So Let's define anxiety and panic. People think panic is a fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
It is not. Anxiety is a fight or flight. It's when your head and your body is ready to fight from a particular danger or flight from a particular danger. Panic is when you're in fight or flight and feel stuck. It's very important because the moment you understand the mechanism of panic, you'll be able to deal with it. Panic is when you are in an anxious state and feel stuck. So, for example, if I'm in a room and a lion pops up, naturally I will get into a fight or flight. I need to survive and fight the lion, or in this case, run away.
Yeah.
But imagine a situation where I'm in a fight or flight, but now the doors are locked, the windows are locked, I cannot escape. My brain immediately feels stuck. And the moment my brain feels stuck, it actually goes against what our human nature, which is survival, and then panic sets in. So there are two ways to actually deal with panic attack. The let's call it the long-term way, is to develop the mechanism, the principles, the structures that ensures that you never feel stuck, that you always know that there is an exit, that there is a way to get out, that there is a way to fix the situation, that you will be okay. Everything will be okay. Now, it's not as simple as just saying everything will be okay, but it's an attitude, we call it an unconditional attitude of strength, knowing that whatever happens, it will work out. Maybe it's a good time to, and we should do a longer segment of this, but my favorite, probably a thinker. One of my favorite thinkers of all time is a guy by the name of Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor, and he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And in his book, he chronicles the experiences in the camp, and he says he found a really interesting common denominator amongst the ones that survived and thrived in the camp as opposed to the ones that didn't.
Right.
He found that a lot of strong men did not make it, but a lot of weak men survived, emotionally survived and coped. And he wondered how come. And he found that the ones that survived had what we call an unconditional attitude of strength. So he tells a story, and I'll allude to this a little bit more, or I'll double click on this in a second. But he tells a story of families being led into the gas chambers on the way there, even though they knew that they were going to die on the way they were singing and dancing. And he said, everything can be taken of a man except the last of all human freedoms, the freedom to choose one's own attitude. The universe can bind your hands, it can bind your feet, it can take everything away from you, but what it can't do is take away your attitude at any given moment. Now, what does attitude mean? Attitude, what is it? It sounds a little bit airy-fairy. The moment I defined attitude as follows, it changed my life completely, and I hope it will do the same thing to some of you. Attitude is defined as a commitment to how this story ends. A commitment to how the story ends. So a story is any challenge that you're going through, and it's up to you to choose how that story will end for you. And my favorite thing, and the thing that, I mean, we'll talk about it in more detail, I guess, as the show has kind of progressed. But my favorite thing is knowing that everything is going to be okay, period. Well, everything is going to be okay. I can't control the external world, but what I can control is my commitment to how my story ends. And something magical happens when you have that attitude, is that you never feel stuck. The moment I know that everything is going to be okay, I never feel this is the end of the book, because it's just what I believe is it's a line in a chapter in a greater book, and the story continues. And when you don't feel stuck, you never get into a panic state. So that's a real method. And by the way, of course, this is very high level.
Mm.
But as you commit to an unconditional attitude of strength, knowing that everything is going to be okay, you will never in your life have a panic attack. But very quickly, I know I'm perhaps other questions. But in the moment, if you're having a panic attack, change your physiology. So the first part, the unconditional attitude of strength,
right,
is how you deal with it forever. That's a never panic attacks again. But if you want to deal with it in the moment, change your physiology. Go, and the best thing that I can offer is go lower your body temperature down. The quickest way to eliminate anxiety and panic is to lower your body temperature down. For anxiety to be created, your body temperature has to go up. There's no ways you can have anxiety and body temperature plummets. So if we can lower your body temperature, then we lower, eliminate your anxiety. So in other words, if I lock in somebody in those walk-in freezers that you get at the liquor store,
mm-hmm.
And lower their body temperature, you can't have a panic attack. It's impossible to have a panic attack. So now I'm freezing. It feels like, as I said, 2 degrees here. Yes, I'm cold, but there's no way I can have a panic. It's impossible to have a panic attack if you're cold. So lower body temperature. So
that's interesting.
Found that cold shower, go grab a bag of ice,
grab a beer.
Just put it at the back of your neck, on your top of your head, lower your body temperature. That's in the immediate.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing you want to do is put Leanne in the freezer at the liquor store, because that'll result in exactly the opposite.
I definitely won't panic.
but that's amazing. Yeah. I didn't realize
like everything is going to be okay.
Listen, I mean,
exactly.
So we call this thing that we do with you on a Monday, everything's going to be okay, because obviously when you're in any situation, you think, oh my God, this is the end. This is the worst. It's not going to get any better. I'm in a disastrous place. Everything's going to be okay is not just some kind of mantra that people say when they're feeling a bit down. Like, it really makes sense, because you get your whole brain figuring things out differently when you say something like that to yourself. And I love this idea of lowering your body temperature, but I mean, what would that actually mean? Having a cold shower? What is that, Leanne? What do you got going on there?
This is a quote that I have on my desk at all times.
Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself.
All that you are. Know that there is something inside you that is greater than any obstacle. Oh, wow. Okay.
Brilliant.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant. Exactly. Now, if you hold on to that, it's impossible to have a panic attack. Impossible. Because then you don't feel stuck. Because you know it's in continuation to something else. You're right, Gareth. What happens is you get your brain into a mode of, if it's going to be okay, there must be a way out, and I must now get into the mode of figuring it out.
Yeah. I'm talking about sayings. I saw this great one over the weekend, which I really liked. I think I even put it on my Twitter, Instagram. Self-pity is easily the most destructive of non-pharmaceutical narcotics. It is addictive, gives momentary pleasure, and separates the victim from reality. You agree with that? That self-pity is a drug?
Absolutely. Listen, people think that by blaming themselves, oh my God, I can't get to from point A to point B because of my depression, because of my ADHD, because I'm anxious, because of my mom when I was six.
Yeah.
They think that gives them any leverage or right to stay stuck. But all it does, it gives you the leverage and right to get stuck. That's all it does. Yeah. So I don't like the blame. I don't like the self blame or the self pity. It gets you moving from point A and staying in point A.
So, okay, lowering your body temperature. How do we practically do this except strip off our clothes in winter and go outside in Dahlstrom? I mean, what if you're in the middle of summer and you jump in the pool? Do you have a cold shower? Do you put ice on the back of your neck? All of those things.
Yeah, exactly. If you're on a plane, you know, so people say to me, I have a fear of flying, what do I do on the plane? Just ask for a cold glass of water, some ice, put in a packet, put it at the back of your neck, on your head, extremities, hands, feet. That will lower your body temperature down.
Great stuff. All right. Some seriously practical information this morning. I'm sorry we don't have time for any others, because there are lots of other questions coming in. And it's always good, Doc. And I hope you'll enjoy your little break in Dahlstrom. I'm glad to see even you take a break, because I know how busy you are. You have client after client after client most days. So this is very, very good. It's nice to see you're also
doing
some self-care. All right, Dr. Hanan Bushkin, everybody. We will see him again next Monday for more. All right, we've got a lot more for you in the next hour, so don't go anywhere, including Collectomania and a bunch of other stuff. So stick around for that and a ton of exciting information, inspiration, entertainment, and empowerment. All of those things and more on the way. CliffCentral.com. Good morning. CliffCentral.com.